This week, I started watching a new TV show called The Good Place. Who's a fan? Raise your hand. Yeah, the second season just started. The show starts, if you've seen it, you know this, when Eleanor Shellstrop wakes up in what is called The Good Place. She and the audience soon find out that she has died. The architect of The Good Place, played by Ted Danson, informs her that she has led a good life and thus has been assigned to spend all of eternity in The Good Place. And the neighborhood to which she has been assigned is perfect, literally. It's a utopia in which everyone can eat as much frozen yogurt as they want and not gain a single pound. They can ask the digital personal assistant Janet for any piece of information or anything that they desire. And it is a place in which everyone has a soulmate, and that soulmate is their perfect match. It all seems perfect until Eleanor discovers that she has been mistakenly put in the good place. As she watches the memories of her life, Eleanor realizes that she is not the person they think she is. The memories playing for her on the screen in her new house do not belong to her. Instead, she should have been placed into, you guessed it, the bad place. As I've watched this week, okay, maybe binge-watched this week, the first season's on Netflix, if you're wondering, I've delighted as the show plays with our understanding of good and bad, our understanding of who deserves to be rewarded for the life they lived and who deserves to be punished. Much like the story that we hear in Genesis this morning about Jacob and Esau. To understand what's going on between these two brothers, we have to go back a couple of chapters before where our reading picks up today. At the start of the boy's story, Isaac, which if you were here last week, the boy who was almost killed by his father, kind of a crazy family history, has grown up and he's taken a wife, Rebecca. And it's almost like some sort of family curse because Rebecca is barren and can't conceive a child, much like her mother-in-law, Sarah. So Isaac prayed to the Lord for his wife because she was barren, and the Lord granted his prayer. And his wife, Rebecca, conceived twins. Twins whose relationship is defined very early. The children struggled within her, and she said, "If it is to be this way, why do I live?" So she went to inquire of the Lord, and the Lord said to her, "Two nations are in your womb, and the two peoples born of you shall be divided. The one shall be stronger than the other. The elder shall serve the younger." The author of Genesis has already begun to toy with our understanding about what is good and what is bad. In a world where the elder always is served by the younger, where the elder is always favored, God flips our understanding and tells us that the elder will serve the younger, setting the stage for the boy's relationship. Esau, the older of the two, escapes the womb, but not before his younger brother Jacob grabs a hold of his heel and rides his way out. And Jacob, who will never let his older brother get away with anything. So when a few years later, Esau comes into the house, totally famished, looking for anything to eat, it's no surprise that Jacob sees an opportunity and offers to trade Esau some food for Esau's birthright. Yeah, that seems totally fair, right? It's a trade that the hungry Esau gladly accepts. Clearly also, he's not the smartest of the two brothers. Already, we get the sense that Jacob will do anything to get ahead of his brother. That Jacob might even sell his soul if it meant that he will come out ahead in the end. And then we finally arrive where our reading picks up today in chapter 27. When Isaac was old and his eyes were dim so that he could not see, he called his elder son Esau and said to him, "My son." And he answered, "Here I am." And Isaac said, "See, I am old. I do not know the day of my death. Now then, take your weapons, your quiver and your bow and go out to the field and hunt game for me. Then prepare for me savory food such as I like and bring it to me to eat so that I may bless you before I die." This is the right thing for Isaac to be doing, to bless his eldest son before he dies. And so he calls in Esau and arranges for that to happen. But Rebekah overhears this exchange. And while it's unclear if she's recalling God's proclamation that the elder of her two sons will serve the younger, or if she simply prefers Jacob to Esau, she calls Jacob over and gives him instructions to bring her two choice kids from their flock so that she can prepare a meal, and then he can deliver it to his father and receive his brother's blessing. It's a move that pits mother and younger son against father and older son. Jacob does exactly as his mother tells him, putting on the furs of the kids to mimic his brother's appearance. Esau was a little hairy, and tricking Isaac into blessing him. Jacob steals the blessing that is meant for Esau. Looking at it objectively, it's difficult to side with Jacob. He's a liar and a trickster, someone who is in it only for his own gain. It's no surprise that when Esau comes back and finds out what has happened, that he's enraged and threatens to kill Jacob. So Jacob has to leave. And while he's on the road to his mother's family, when we hit the second part of our story, he came to a certain place and stayed there for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones of the place, he put it under his head and lay down in that place. And he dreamed that there was a ladder set up on the earth, the top of it reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And the Lord stood beside him and said, "I am the Lord, the God of Abraham your father, and the God of Isaac." This is not the fulfillment of the story we'd expect. Jacob, who has been sneaky and sly, Jacob, who has slighted his brother out of what is rightfully his, Jacob, who seemingly only cared about himself and would almost certainly end up in the bad place if this were an episode of The Good Place, winds up being blessed not only by his father, but also by God. God tells him, "Know that I am with you and will keep you wherever you go, and will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you." Like The Good Place, the story messes with our sense of what is right and wrong. It challenges our notion that only good people are blessed by God. After Jacob has made his bed and is forced to lay in it with nothing but a rock for a pillow, God comes to him, reminding him that God is already there with him. And then Jacob woke up from his sleep and said, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it." God comes to Jacob in his time of need, his greatest time of need, even though he is less than honorable. God is present with Jacob, even if Jacob does not know it. And I think it is that way with us as well. Often God is here even if we do not know it. The Lord is in this place even if we do not recognize him. And the Lord is in all of the places that you will go, even if you do not know it. When you walk into the doctor's office to get test results, or when you walk into the hospital for surgery, God is already there. When you enter your home and it is as tense as Isaac and Rebekah's, God is there. When you go to work and wish to be anywhere but there, God is there too. God is in the darkest places of your life. God is also in the most joyous places of your life. No matter if you're a good person and belong in the good place, or if you're a bad person and belong in the bad place, God is there. Always.